You are listening to Manimalism. Don't ask yourself why.
There it was, folks. Andrew Lehman named the show, and that is our new Manimal podcast logo. Manimalism.
Oh, boy.
I mean, if you record, this is our fourth one, so you know.
Yeah,
it's a thing now. You can't say it's not a thing.
It's a thing. Fortunately, there's only actually a few more episodes of Manimal left in existence, so can't take it that far. But you're listening to the bonus episode of December 2020 on HP Podcraft.
That's right. Strange Studies of Strange Stories, Maximum Effort for Manimal Benefit. I'm still toying with taglines. Thank you, Heather, for recording that one.
Yeah.
Might have her do a few more as we keep going with this, when we keep going with this. But also thank you, Heather, for watching this episode with me. We were talking about all kinds of different stuff for maybe doing bonus material this month. Mm-hmm. You know, we decided against adaptations of Turn of the Screw, even though there are a lot.
Yeah,
because who wants more of that? But I was also kicking around the movie Blood and Black Lace, which I like. And we talked about some other movies as well. But in the end, it's been such a rotten year. We decided to go for some comfort food.
Exactly.
Manimal is the macaroni and cheese of of animal hybrid 80s kind of cop shows. And, you know, Heather and I both agreed that this one was definitely an episode of television. And when I say that, I mean, it had no time stretching powers like they normally do. You know,
yeah.
It was and felt like about 50 minutes. Surprisingly,
there you go.
It was a pretty competent television show. The first one of these so far that was it displayed this level of competence, I thought. And I was so burned out by that third one. I really thought there was no hope. So I was glad this one was as good. There wasn't any like magic trick level absurdity. But as I did tease out on Twitter, there was a switchblade fight with a hawk. So... There's some good stuff. We should just get into it. This was Manimal episode 4, Female of the Species. That was, boy, that's a title that made me a little nervous. Was there some intro stuff that was a little different this time?
There was. Like maybe they cut in some new clips. I'm guessing what happened was they actually shot more of the show, so they were able to put more clips from the show in the intro.
Yeah, there was a shaving cream bit or something in there that I didn't see before.
We begin with some stock footage from India, but this is actually supposed to be stock footage because we are in a classroom. It is some kind of lecture, but Dr. Jonathan Chase is not the lecturer. He is a student or an observer along with Detective McKenzie. The lecturer says they have discovered a woman who was raised by wolves.
I guess that the documentary filmmakers had like the entire Indian jungle wired up with cameras and... drones, because it's one of those things where the documentary has some angles that how did they get that?
Yeah.
She's running away from her pursuers, and then they have handheld over the shoulder shots of her scared expression. Why isn't she looking right into the camera if it's there?
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
I always enjoy it when there's like cuts within security footage. You know, when filmmaking techniques are applied to something that's supposed to be found, that always cracks me up.
Yeah. There's a lot of that in Star Trek, let me tell you. He says that there are many cases of children raised by wolves. And I thought to myself, is this true? I looked it up. So more often, they are referred to as feral children. And there's a lot of folklore and legend about these, but there actually seems to be some confirmed cases. There are accounts of people being raised by primates of different types, monkeys and apes, dogs, bears, sheep, cattle, and there's a case where a kid was raised by some goats, and one where a kid was raised, I'm not kidding, by an ostrich.
So when you say raised, what exactly does that entail? They protected them for a couple of
years?
Yes,
and they live with them. Usually they're older. They're like between, some are even like 10 years old and they start living with these animals. So it's not like they're little babies and they're being picked up. But there's lots of different cases where these types of things have happened. I mean, dude, we could talk about this. That could be a whole episode because it's crazy stuff. But we're straying a little too far away from Manimal. To bring it back to Manimal, there are three stories. I got this from Wikipedia about wolves raising children. The Hessian wolf children, and this was from 1304, 1341, and 1344. Take this one with a grain of salt here.
Well, yeah, they might have some documentary footage of that, hopefully.
These children lived with the Eurasian wolf in the forest of Hesse. Then there's Dinah Sanachar, who was discovered among wolves in a cave in Pradesh, India, in 1872, and he was 6 years old. He went on to live among humans for over 20 years, including picking up smoking, but he never learned to speak and remained seriously impaired for his entire life.
So I wonder, maybe that, since it was in India, was somehow the writers could of be. This were snapping at that. I like how that's the threshold into humanity, though. We knew when he picked up smoking, he was stupid enough to be a human man.
And lastly, we got Marcos Rodriguez Pantoja. And this was in 1946 in Spain. Lived for 12 years with wolves in the mountains of southern Spain. He was discovered at the age of 19. Rodriguez's story was depicted in the 2010 Spanish-German film Entre Lobos. For his portrayal of Rodriguez, young actor Manuel Camacho received the Best New Actor nomination at the 2011 Goya Awards.
He dedicated the award to the actress playing the wolf girl in this Manimal episode. Were it not for her formative work in the genre of wolf-raised humans. Pulls on a cigarette. Never would I have achieved the 2011 Goya Award.
That story was from 1946. So this professor did absolutely no research because obviously she's not the first person raised by a wolf.
Yeah, well, you know, if that was your first clue that it's a shady operation here,
a lot more are coming.
She's called the Wolf Girl of Saltampur. She had been seen 10 years ago, but the professor couldn't find her. So 6 months ago, there were new sightings and he found her. And then we see this footage of this woman running around. She's naked, I think, but she has really long hair covering her breasts and she has flesh-colored panties on.
Right. Well, I think you're supposed to assume that she is, but...
Yes, they film it in a way that you can't see her her butt crack or any of that other stuff.
Right.
And strangely, she's white.
Well, strangely, yeah, for the area. What's this white woman doing here? At the end of the documentary, they catch her in a net and it kind of freezes on her screaming. And then everybody in the lecture hall applauds. I was like, this is some weird stuff, man. Just what did I just watch? You know, what is this room of people? This is messed up.
So the professor goes on about how she won't wear human clothes and she'll only wear stuff from animals that were killed.
I was hoping that was a setup to having her wearing some leather Sandra Dee outfit. Like she, you know, that's animal skin, but it's just an excuse to put her in the, as expected, Raquel Welch, you know, 1 million years BC costume, strategically ripped bikini business.
Yeah.
But why build it into the script? Just do it if you're going to do that. To have him go, she just wouldn't accept any other kind of human clothes.
There was obviously some thought that went into it. It wasn't the right decision, sure.
No.
But they were at least thinking about these things, which shows something. This isn't just a slapdash. People are actually putting a little effort into it. And I appreciate
it. No, they put a lot of effort into it. Actually, doing a little backstory reading, there were three other writers that died because they went out and tried to put clothes on a wolf. They were seeing what would a wolf wear. Said, I want to know that this is backed up.
So then we see some shady dude with Roddy Piper hair sneaking into the wolf woman's cell area. And he throws in some kind of explosive.
Yeah, but stop. So there's a cell. It's in the facility where they're showing.
Yeah, the college.
Yeah. So in the lecture hall, somewhere else in the building. What the hell? He says, okay, she'll only stay in a cave environment that's close to what she's used to. And then I realized, wait a minute, she's in an office. What's going on? They constructed this not at a facility of any kind, but at this university building. And then when they cut to it, she was like sleeping in a corner of a room and there was some theater set kind of stone walls to mimic a cave, I guess. And a bunch of wooden boxes around. I don't know how that mimics the jungle environment, but they labeled the boxes India. So I guess that was their strategy to make her feel at home. And made me laugh. So, sir, have you thought about writing India on the boxes? It seems to calm her.
What's rad, too, is it's written in English as well.
Yes, it's written in English.
So the explosive he throws in catches a bunch of those boxes on fire. I guess that's why they were there, because they needed something to catch fire.
Then it makes, right, exactly.
So she starts to howl, and Dr. Chase knows that it's a howl of danger, not a howl of complaint. So he runs in, kicks open the door, rescues her, but she jumps past him, goes down the hall, and busts through a window.
Crashes through the glass, out into campus. Man, this happened quick, too. So Heather laughed so hard when she started howling. And that was a pleasure to hear. And then she starts tearing across campus, and we were both laughing so hard. It was such an absurd scene.
It was so good. So Jonathan gives Chase, yeah, like what I did there? As she goes into the city, and we get her being freaked out by cars and people and all that cliched stuff. You know, she's like Dar from Through the Portal of Time. Jonathan finally corners her, and he uses his powers or maybe just his charm. I'm not sure, but he calms her. And then, of course, the frickin' cops show up and they start pointing guns at her and she freaks out and crawls up a drain pipe.
That's all amazing. But believe it or not, the weirdest part of the episode just happened under your nose. And I don't know if you even noticed.
No.
But at the very end of the show, credits come up. The first credit that comes up, Gloria Stewart as the bag lady. I was like, what are you talking about? Gloria Stewart that I know, the actress Gloria Stewart? Really quickly, I grabbed the controller, roll back, because I didn't remember a bag lady in this episode. I'm running it back. Wait, there's one. It's in this scene in the alleyway. There's a woman going through the garbage for a split second.
What?
Get on IMDb. It was indeed star of The Invisible Man, The Old Dark House, and probably in her biggest role, the star of the 1996 film Titanic. Gloria Stewart is in this episode of Manimal as the bag lady.
What? But she's like on screen for a second.
No lines. Doesn't even really have a bit of business to do. For all intents and purposes, it's an extra.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't remember her. It is Gloria Stewart. Academy Award nominee Gloria Stewart.
What? Why?
She must have been friends with somebody on the production or something. And they said, why don't you come down and shoot this thing for fun? That had to be what it was.
Or maybe there was a scene with her. And it got cut.
Maybe there was a scene. Yeah, I don't know, because they show her. He goes after the wolf girl and uses this weird palms up technique. He's holding his palms up and that seems to calm her down. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
So when they cut back to the cops with their guns and stuff, I thought, oh, she's going to be there with them. No, she's gone. So it was just in the little setup and she never appears again.
She goes down that alley and it's a dead end and she kind of panics for a while before he shows up. So maybe there was a bit with the old lady and her and it got cut.
It's very possible. And, you know, people wouldn't have cared because they would have said, who the heck is Gloria Stewart? Because she was famous in the 30s and 40s.
Right.
Titanic was still 12 years in the future. So, really, really crazy that a star of that caliber was in. So there's a connection from The Invisible Man to Manimal to Titanic. You can look it up. There she is.
Wow.
Oh, there was also in that moment something that made me laugh, because when he was holding the palms up, he says to the wolf girl, you're quite safe here. You're quite safe here. And I swear to God, I thought he was saying, white savior. White savior. I rewound it. They're not really just calling it out, are they?
So Jonathan jumps up on a fire escape and he goes after her. But man, Simon McCorkindale, he actually does the climbing, because I ran this back. He's facing the camera. He runs, jumps on top of a cop car, and then grabs the ladder and then pulls himself up by his arms and then goes up on the thing. And I'm like, dude, he just did that. He is that strong.
He's in good shape. You know that because he gratuitously takes his shirt off later in the episode.
He does. Once he gets onto the roof, he can't find her. He's lost her. So guess what? It's Hawk time. Transformation scene. Am I wrong? Or is there like a new eye bit where his eye changes from a hawk, or from his human eye to like a hawk eye?
Yeah, it like fills in slowly. That looked new to me too. There were also some cool animal reaction shots. That's like the pattern now, I guess. Because remember we did the one and I said he just shot that squirrel in his yard or whatever. There was more of that. There was a cat laying out there drinking a Diet Coke that was shocked by this transformation. And also a pigeon. And they did the same thing with the squirrel where they have this kind of this I'm out of here moment with the pigeon. The camera cut in, the pigeon looked shocked, and then it flew away.
I don't know what this is about. She's in a park. She finds some food on a picnic table, and then a group of four men dressed in yellow jackets, I guess they're a gang or something, they jump out and immediately start to sexually harass her. She runs. They run after her. Why? I guess to rape her? In broad daylight? I don't know. Dude, it just doesn't make any sense. And then they're physically assaulting her, but not, you know, like kind of pushing her around.
Yeah, it was. I've never had the specific confusion where I couldn't tell if it was a horrific raping gang or kind of a fun dancing gang, because they were pushing her around, but they were also doing little moves and stuff. The energy vacillated between those two extremes really quickly. And I also didn't understand why they were so agitated. At first, they were kind of making fun of her, but what were they mad about her? But there was a key piece of ADR dialogue here when she's running away. And one of the guys goes, what is this, Halloween? Which at the moment made me laugh.
Well, she defends herself and she bites one of them. And then things get intense, and this dude pulls out a switchblade.
Yes.
But then Manimal shows up and attacks him as a hawk. That was the scene that you were referencing.
It's a pretty good switchblade fight, because usually I'm used to them showing the animals like out of context. You know, you'll see the guy and then you just see the hawk. But there's a shot where the switchblade's waving around in front of the hawk. They made an effort on this one. And then there's an insert where the switchblade just goes into a wing.
It's obviously a fake wing. They're not going to stab it. But it doesn't move at all. And the shot's long enough that you can see that it is a completely static stuffed animal wing. The hawk is on the guy's back. So I don't know how the heck he was supposed to. It's a mess. It's an editing mess. But it does communicate that Manimal is actually stabbed.
I thought it mimics the confusion that actually happens in a fight, I thought.
They all run off. The wounded Manimal is just on the ground. He can't fly away. And he looks, it looks really sad.
It is sad. Made me really sad.
So we get a commercial break, and when we get back, Jonathan is human again, and he's with a paramedic who notes that there are feathers in the wound, and the attacker must have used his knife to skin birds. So that, to me, that like, and you know, he knowingly says, oh yeah, that must be what it is.
The thing that surprised me is this EMT is kind of the best detective that's been on the show so far.
So the lieutenant shows up and says that, hey, that fire was arson. That's weird, because that sounds like a hit job. And why would anybody want to kill this wolf girl? Jonathan thinks that he knows where she might go to find comfort, but is worried that they will kill her.
Yeah, he has one of those aha moments. He goes, I think I know where she'll go. On my couch, I went, the zoo? You know, I mean, it's not, it doesn't take a Manimalist intellect to figure that one out.
So that night at the zoo, she sneaks into the wolf cage. The wolves are very aggressive to her. But a panther, Manimal, shows up and he rescues her. She seems to recognize his smell. He turns back to a human form in the wolf cage with her. So she knows that he can turn into animals now. He puts his hands out and she touches his hands and makes doggy noises, which makes me very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. He takes her back to his place, of course, and she's asleep when Mackenzie and Jonathan are chatting about what's going on. Mackenzie says, I'm going to go make some coffee. When she goes and walks by Wolf Girl, she attacks her.
That was hilarious, that moment. And Manimal says, she's just guarding her territory, which I guess is this corner of the room now. Mackenzie goes, I think she's jealous of my relationship with you. So I was wondering, are they together at this point?
Think so. They've never smooched.
It was later when the detective was giving Wolf Girl a bath.
Yeah.
She came out and was all wet, and they sort of had this intimate sort of way they joked together that made it seem like they were a couple. And Heather was demanding that I tell her this, whether they're a couple now or not. And I didn't have an answer. And I think it was making her mad that I didn't have an answer. I think she thought maybe I was hiding something from her. I don't know.
They're not a couple, but there is sexual tension there.
Yeah. Okay.
Fair. Jonathan's able to calm her, but he notices her vaccination scar on her arm and notes that this is the place where vaccines are given in America. So she's American.
I thought in that moment, why is he the one to figure this out if she was at a university before? Did she even see a doctor, or did the documentary crew take her right to the classroom cell?
I don't know.
Didn't they even check her temperature or anything? Manimal's trying to figure out who wants to kill her. Guess what, Manimal? It's everybody she's come into contact with thus far. Everybody's criminal.
I'm not sure where Manimal goes, but he leaves Wolf Girl by herself. And then at this point, Ty, good old comic relief Ty, rolls in from a party. Mm-hmm. He's drunk and dressed as a knight.
Yes.
And he's with Frankenstein's monster and a belly dancer. They're there to drop him off because he is hammered and couldn't drive himself. So they drove him.
Now, here's what's interesting. We know that it's not Halloween because the gang set that up earlier. He didn't say, hey, by the way, it's Halloween. He said, what do you think this is? Halloween. So it's clearly not.
Yeah.
Now, people might have a costume party some other time of the year, but these are pretty advanced costumes. So Occam's razor tells us they just pulled a job. Like,
what?
Ty got in the suit of armor. They put it out on the beach. Family comes up, starts dragging the suit of armor to their car. This will look good in our living room. As they're putting it in the car, a belly dancer shows up and says, hey, obviously the belly dancer is going to get their attention.
Sure.
What's going on with this belly dancer? She goes, I have tickets to a free stand-up show tonight. Frankenstein's going to be performing. You're not going to want to miss this. So they put the suit of armor up in the living room. They go out to the comedy show. Ty rips the place off. Everybody gets together later and has some drinks. Classic con. So that happened right before this.
Didn't get that. Ty sees Wolf Woman on the floor asleep, and he assumes that this Wolf Woman is some kind of sexual conquest of Manimal's. And he goes, oh, look, party's over. I got to get you a cab. And of course, she doesn't know what the hell's going on. He lights a cigar at this point, as you do. You come home drunk, you want to have a cigar in your suit of armor with your helmet. She attacks him. The lid of his helmet falls down, closes, so the cigar falls inside of his helmet, and comedy ensues.
And Ty stumbles around and falls into, I guess it's a koi pond in the middle of the house or something?
I thought it was a jacuzzi.
That's what it meant. Yes, it's, I think you're right. Ty also at this moment intimates that Chase, one of the other women who's been over that he's probably had to get a cab for in the past, was some kind of snake charmer. And maybe he had sex, or she had sex with a snake, and they watched, or Manimal turned into a snake. I'm not kidding.
No, I know. I remember it because he shuts him up because Mackenzie's around.
He doesn't want her to know about his snake antics.
There's a dark side to Manimal that we don't usually talk about. We get to a scene in the park the next day. Creepy guy in the suit, who was at the lecture before we saw him, is there to meet with the hitman. The guy in the suit is Mr. Langley, and he wants this wolf girl dead, but we still don't know why.
That Roddy Piper hitman made me laugh because he goes, look, I don't really want to go after her again. It's entirely possible she was hit by a car and she died. Sounds like something you'd say about a runaway. This is a wolf girl. Like, it's a human being. You would have heard about that if you're after her.
Yeah.
He's just trying to get out of the job. That was the funniest hitman line I've ever heard. I know I messed up the first time, but look, she ran away. A car probably took care of it.
So Mackenzie and Dr. Chase are in his lab. He's doing an exam on a wallaby, I think. Mm-hmm. That's like a small kangaroo-like creature. Those are wallabies, right?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. That must be a clue they're dropping for a wallaby plot down the line.
Mackenzie wants to know if it's true about people being raised by animals. And he rattles off a few cases, none of which I could find. So I think the writer just made all this stuff up. He says that some of them can lead normal lives, but not all of them. It all depends on how they are reintroduced into human society. And now from what I've read, it's more about the age of the child and how long they were out in the wild on whether they could be brought back into human society. He deduces that since she walks upright, that must mean that she was taught to walk. So she must be like maybe 4 years old when she was lost to the wolves. And he thinks if he could spend some time with her, he could break through and maybe help her remember human ways.
And he kind of makes it sound like he specifically has some methodology to do this. He says it would take so much years of behavioral therapy, but I might be able to have a breakthrough with her quickly, presumably because he's got Manimal techniques that, you know, modern science isn't used to.
Which is plausible for the show.
Yeah.
I'll buy that. So that night, he sleeps on the floor near her, and then she crawls over and cuddles up with him and sleeps with him. Not as creepy as it could have been. Still creepy, but not as creepy as it could have been, because he, like, pets her in the head. And it's just, I always get a little weirded out when people act like animals. That's kind of a kind of thing that bugs me a bit.
Heather commented on this one, and I remember she said it a lot in the pilot, too, that all of this feels like pornography set up without the pornography. Her getting the net thrown on her earlier. I mean, there's just so many situations that feel like setups for that in this show, and then it doesn't go that way. The acting, everything about it, you know, feels like 80s porn.
We have the scene where Mackenzie comes out of the bathroom. She's just given Wolf Girl a bath, but she won't wear regular clothes. So Jonathan takes off the shirt that he's wearing and reveals his awesome physique and hands it over to her because he's got the goods. Why not flaunt it?
Yeah, Dale playing Detective Mackenzie gives us a little insight though, because she doesn't react to it at all. She just takes the shirt and goes into the bathroom.
Yeah,
she literally does not react to him doing that, which tells us that he does it all the time and that she's sick of it. So I like that moment. Who cares?
The professor is driving through town and we see that the hitman is following the professor, the guy that gave the lecture in the beginning. He goes straight to JC's place. Inside, Wolf Girl's hair has been done. We see JC is trying to show her reflection, and he's got a picture of a wolf, and he's saying, hey, look, that's you. That's a wolf. You're not a wolf. You know, that whole business.
His insight, his technique that's going to skip through years of behavioral therapy is a makeup mirror, and he points at it and says, girl, and then this is the trick. It's really simplistic. He just points in the mirror and he says, you, girl, and that's it. And this was the first time, I guess, I went, you know, maybe Manimal's full of shit with this whole thing.
So the professor shows up and accuses JC of trying to steal his publicity. But JC, he tells him off. He says that she is a woman. She has rights. She's not owned by anybody. I have been made her custodian. I'm going to protect her. And I'm not in it for the glory. I care about the girl. The professor, he's really mad about this, but what could he do? So he says, you haven't heard the last of this. And he storms out of there. And we see the hitman is in the van with a rifle and a scope. Yeah. Like in the van on the street. How is this going to work?
I don't know. He's going to shoot somebody driving a car, hoping that that car veers off the road and hits the wolf girl. He's going to reverse engineer his idea that a car killed her.
I mean, there's not even a silencer on the rifle. Like, everybody will see a dude shooting. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Anyway, Ty shows up. He's done some research. He found out that there was an industrialist in his family. They died in a boating accident in India right around the time, because they figured out how old she's supposed to be, should be this girl's age. But the whole family, it was a mom and a dad and a little boy and a little girl. They found the three bodies, but they didn't find the girl's body. And JC, he wants to take her back to the family home to see if it jogs her memory.
The thing that made me laugh was the way this was all presented, because earlier Ty says, I'm going to go look at newspaper records and see if there's any missing children around that area around that time. And then when he presents this to them, he starts reading the article and he goes, now get this. There was a missing child. Like, yeah, I hope so. Otherwise, why are you reading us this article? That's kind of the whole thing you said you were going to do. Yeah. And then he goes, now get this. He reads the part about the missing child. And then Detective McKenzie goes, and you think that that might be this girl? You know, it's like they completely forgot the setup they had done a scene before. It was so bad.
So when JC, Ty, and Wolf Woman, who they believe is Sarah, they start calling her Sarah at this point, they leave. The hitman just starts shooting at him. He just opens fire right in the middle of broad daylight on a busy street full of lots of people. It's insane. And then he drives away because he misses them. And then we get a car chase. Now, why are they chasing after this guy with the girl that he wants murdered in the car with them?
So, like, right. Why doesn't he just turn into a hawker and follow this guy?
Like, if I was the hitman, I'd lead him, because they follow him for quite some time, lead him down some dark alleyway where there's no witnesses. And when they pull in, take out your gun and shoot him.
Well, you were pondering things that are good. I was actually in this moment thinking, can Manimal turn into another person?
Well, due to some truck getting in the way, the hitman is able to escape.
Just like somebody who had to kill an animal would use every part of the animal in order to honor it. Mm-hmm. They don't just waste this van that cut them off. Manimal looks up and goes, that van, they sell toys. I have an idea. And this leads to his innovative therapy technique of getting some dolls and using them to reenact the story of Sarah's tragedy. Yeah. So that was his innovative therapy technique, though, is he's I'm just going to open myself up to it, and whatever I read on a random van is going to be the key.
It's mystical. It's fate.
It is mystical.
And he's trapped into that. So they get some toys, little figurines. Ty starts doing this bit with animals, and Sarah's eating it up. She's love it. This is the funniest thing she's ever seen. JC brings up some figures that represent the boat and the parents and her brother.
The dad, the action figures, got like open hands, which I thought was... okay, are they making a connection there? But the brother's named Chris. There was a funny scene where they were just showing the wolf girl this and going, Chris, it's Chris. And I wanted to record that and send it to you because it was making me laugh. It's so surreal. If you just took it all out of context, it's just that moment of this wolf girl looking at an action figure and them going, this is Chris.
It seems to trigger some memory in her and she cries. But then... She picks up Skeletor.
Uh-huh.
A Skeletor action figure, and he attacks the boat.
That's either meant to mean it was a natural disaster that somebody uprighted or whatever it was, but I thought, what? They're going to discount this because the other toys were non-branded. This was the only branded toy she picked up. She is actually identifying Skeletor as the person who killed her family. We had threatened to do some Masters of the Universe fan fiction on here, and what do you know? It's a crossover.
Well, there's a lot of interdimensional multiverse He-Man stuff out there. There was a whole graphic novel series about this, because there's all these different iterations of He-Man. So Manimal could be one of the universes that Skeletor went to.
Undoubtedly. I wasn't prepared for that connection to pop
15, up 20 years ago. Yeah, it blew my mind that there's levels to this episode that just kind of get glanced over.
This obviously. Girl wouldn't have experienced the tragedy of her life if it weren't for Skeletor.
I think they were just foreshadowing the second season arc that never happened.
Oh.
So McKenzie is talking to Mr. Langley out on his boat. We find out he was a business partner to Sarah's father. He says Sarah's body was found later and that he then decided to have her body burned, and the ashes were scattered on the river where she died.
It all happened, trust me. I was the only person there, but I'm telling you, that's the way it went down. Yeah.
Of course, Mackenzie doesn't really believe him. She's got a very skeptical look on her face as she leaves. JC and Ty suspect that the family was murdered. And, you know, that's what this whole Skeletor thing was all about. So Mackenzie does some research. She finds out that Langley went to India a week before the accident.
Yeah, a week before. He didn't go later on a fact-finding mission. He was there earlier. So he probably was meeting with Skeletor.
See, it's all making sense. Then she looks at some footage of the lecture, and she sees that Langley's there. And she's like, well, why would he be there unless he thought that that might be her? While this is going on, Sarah's up to some animal antics, and somehow she's gotten into the washing machine and poured soap into the clothes thing. So the whole room's filled with soap. I don't know how many times your dog's done this, but it's hilarious. They start to play and do a little hide and seek, and then it gets kind of sexual. She starts licking him, and he goes, oh, I'm not a wolf. You know, she's grooming me, but this is inappropriate. And then he stops her from doing it, and then she gets all sad.
The room's filled with foam. I mean, it really is a porn setup there. That's a whole thing in Tijuana, these foam shows.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. The hitman now has an assistant hitman. They knock out JC, and they chloroform Sarah and take her away. And just as they leave, Mackenzie and Ty show up, and they see Jonathan has been knocked out. They figure out they must be at Langley's yacht. When they get there at the dock, he's already gone. But then there's this this photographer taking pictures of women in bikinis right next to where the boat was, and they commandeer his boat, and they don't even let the girls get off the boat. This one girl is still on the boat when they drive away, and she falls off into the water.
And well, the photographer never stops taking pictures either. It's this weird, like, they're so enraptured with their modeling and photography that they don't notice the boat they're on being stolen. Even though they say, we're taking your boat.
Yeah,
it was really funny.
So Langley and Rider Piper are out on the ocean. They've got a crate, and they're going to put her in the crate with some weights and drown her.
And she's howling the whole time. And I was furious. I said, ooh, they're going to use that, because her howling, Manimal will understand where she is. So that's how he'll find her. They don't use it at all.
So JC sees the boat. They catch up to it. But just then, the crate is thrown into the ocean. Jonathan Chase transforms into something new. We haven't seen this yet?
Yes.
We don't know what he's changing into. He just jumps into the water, and then a shark shows up. The reveal is that Manimal has changed into a dolphin.
Yeah.
He fights the shark.
Look, man, I just had to say, this is an excellent episode of television. In the climax, the main character turns into a dolphin, fights a shark, and frees a wolf girl from a submerged box.
What's great, too, is that Mackenzie says, hey, freeze, we're the police. The hitmen guys and the cronies, they just start shooting at him. What do they think is going to happen? How are they going to get out of this situation? And then Langley, what's he doing? It's his boat. They're just screwed. Didn't make any sense at all. They didn't even try to hide or anyway.
No.
Harbor Patrol shows up, captures the bad guys. Dolphin Manimal, like you said, busts up with the crate, saves her.
Murders the shark. He defeats the shark.
He does.
Like, he doesn't drive it off. He somehow kills that shark. It has a death scene.
It kills the shark. Ty gets the girl out of the water. Manimal, as a dolphin, decides to do some acrobatics. And he just kind of jumping around and doing flips and stuff.
Awesome.
It's just dandy.
That should have been the end of the episode, honestly. Manimal doing tricks for them. I killed a shark! Yay!
We've got a wrap-up scene. JC is working with Sarah. He shows her face and her name. I guess it works.
Yeah.
We find out from Ty and Mackenzie that Langley's in jail. And Sarah, she starts to talk. His technique is working. Yay! My heart is so freaking warm. This is the best.
The mirror technique works out. She identifies who she is.
And that's the end of the episode. I do have to say, though, doing some research, this is almost the identical storyline to the 1986 episode of The Wizard titled Endangered Species, as well as the 1994 episode of the same name in Thunder in Paradise. All three episodes were written by Michael Burke and Douglas Schwartz.
Good for them. They sold the same script three times. It's amazing.
It is.
I wonder if they have a few of those that they sold to a bunch of different shows.
Maybe.
Like, they just figured out the 80s drama action template and said, all we have to do is figure out, you know, what the main character's talent is, and we'll just plug those into the variable scenes, you know.
Yeah. Well, I gotta say, this is so far my favorite episode of Manimal.
It swung back around for sure. It was really good.
It's not my overall favorite episode, because that has yet to come.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
So far, the first four episodes we've watched, it's getting better.
This one definitely rescued Manimalism. This show probably wasn't gonna, if it had been another slog like episode three,
Yeah.
Yeah. This thing would have pod faded. But you know what? I think this is, we got that jolt of manimalism that we needed, and we'll probably keep going.
Not every month. We'll space it out a bit. But this is definitely something that we're going to come back to. I've got to finish this manimal journey. It's important to me.
I hope you guys enjoy this and the concluding coverage on Turn of the Screw. We're going to be back in the new year. We're doing a Clark Ashton Smith story. So we'll be back on pulpy Lovecraftian brand in January. For now, I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey. And you've been listening to the bonus content only on Patreon.